Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Welcome back, everyone, to a new Banking Reinvented episode. It's just past the summer holidays, so we're back in office. And I'm very pleased that today I have with me Tony Ball, who's the president of Payments and Identity at Entrust. But even more so, he's the incoming CEO of Entrust by April 1st, which is not an April Fool's joke because it's in the news, it's public. And again, I'm very happy to have you in the show, Tony. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Tim. Thanks for the invite. Looking forward to conversation today.
Likewise. Maybe in short, brief introduction from your end. And it's also good for the audience to understand, maybe in simple terms, what part of the stack is Entrust helping banks with?
Yeah, so think of Entrust at the forefront of consumer and citizen identity. We also enable workforce identity as well. But if I take the consumer identity, anytime you're thinking about onboarding to a financial institution, opening a bank account, being in a position to go about accessing financial services, then Entrust is the type of organization that powers that, right? From a biometric onboarding, a doc check, right the way through to the life cycle of your identity to outcome. So the provision of a card that you might pick up physically or now more meaningfully digitally. So that's really how we go about our business. We do exactly the same in the citizen space. So application for visas, passports, that kind of thing, which also underpin the financial industry as well. So that's really what Entrust is very much about.
Yeah, clear. What type of banks would you typically collaborate with or would choose for Entrust?
Broad spectrum. We've been in business 55 years and we grew up in the financial industry. We were very much a financial first company. And predominantly that was in the tier one financial arena in North America, also serving the credit unions in North America as well. Fast forward all the way to modern banking today and consider some of the more disruptive fintech banks like the buy now, pay later companies like the Klarnas of this world, the Chimes, the Affirms, the Revolutes of this world. So we're operating at both ends of the spectrum, which makes this really exciting space to be part of right now.
Yeah, it totally is. Hey, before we get started with the rest of the show, you had a bit of an idea on what is currently top of mind in the industry, and you mentioned Klarna. What is currently happening there? What would you like to share?
Well, firstly, I mean, for those who are not aware, Klarna is, I think, back on the agenda for IPOing. But that's secondary. The thing that I'm really picking up is what I'd call a credit crunch in North America. I think it's weighing heavy on consumers. The advent of buy now, pay later. 3 or 4 months ago, I saw that hitting even your food delivery companies, right? DoorDash and Deliveroo, where you can use buy now, pay later. But the application for buy now, pay later experiences has reached record heights in the US, which gives you some indication that with the tariff situation and with some of the conflict spilling out and also some of the macroeconomic concerns, that consumers are really feeling the pinch right now and starting to think about how they are more planful in their financing. And that starts to ring a few alarm bells to say, are we facing something that we haven't seen for quite some time?
Yeah. And clearly there's a correlation with the IPO opportunity because they're growing fast. But that's not a great thing in a way, right?
Right. Most things have are double-edged swords, right? So in the growth trajectory and being a very disruptive and innovative force in the payment ecosystem, primarily because they go about it in a completely different way. They look at having a really strong emphasis on an instant and embedded and in digital approach to financial applications, whereas some of the more traditional banks find it very difficult to move as quickly. So it's great to be following a disruptor like this and watching how they're growing and with net new consumers. But equally, buy now, pay later, as you rightly point out, has another connotation in terms of how consumers are having to navigate their finances right now.
Yeah, definitely a good one to keep an eye on. I share the concern indeed. Now, coming back to the context that you look after, especially also as the upcoming CEO of the business, What are you currently seeing in the payments modernization space? Like at large, if you zoom out, what are the trends that are currently influencing the business and influencing the landscape?
It's primarily that banks are having to rethink the way that they engage with customers, primarily because the user experience, the instant gratification, the need for this to be something that is connected and seamless is something that is more and more desired and almost now becoming a de facto standard in the eyes of the consumer. That to me is more of what is taking place. And it's coming about because, we've seen this over the last 4 or 5 years with COVID. We do an awful lot more of what we do remotely. We do it from the comfort of our own home. Are we going into bank branches? Are we going into in-person relationships? We will at some point, but not necessarily in the onboarding experience or indeed the ability to navigate digital transactions. And the expectation that this is completely connected, that you're not dealing with out of band or clunky experiences or transactions that you're being asked to undertake that don't feel natural. And that's top of mind for the financial institution, and it's driven primarily because the consumers are expecting more of them. And that's what's attracting consumers to these more disruptive banking solutions. So I see that as a huge change that's being undertaken in the financial industry.
So in a way, it's the direct translation of, let's say, the more modern applications that you and I and everyone around us uses daily. They're instant, they're seamless, whether it's indeed DoorDash to your example or Uber or any of those. Also in the banking context, you have that expectation, which is something we have been seeing for the past 5 to 10 years as a main thing. At the same time, just to challenge it also a little bit, the willingness to do everything digital might also be under pressure, especially also with the advent of AI. Like, how do we make sure that they are real individuals, that there's no deepfake, trying to onboard and getting into an account and doing certain transactions that are, not the ones you are looking for as a bank? Digital plus human is typically something we discuss. How do you see that when compared to this trend? It's not just the experience. I also want to feel safe when I onboard or when I originate for certain types of products.
Yeah, if you want to ask what keeps the likes of myself and others up at night, it is the incredible increase in fraud that's been undertaken, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years. It we know that that's obviously baked into the business model. And In the name of convenience, you're always inviting a modicum of fraud into the user experience and obviously into the cost of doing business. But with the advent of AI and the speed with which bad actors can move now, because the tool sets that are available to us to prevent fraud are the same tool sets that are available to bad actors to try to get ahead of it. And it's important that when you think about AI, you're thinking about it also in the context of access to key data that helps you train models to try to anticipate where fraudsters are going to move. And fraud rings today are moving at unprecedented speed. They don't have a nationality. They don't have an identity as such. They move very quickly and they move globally. And being able to visibly see those attack vectors and using AI as a predictive modeling technique, but also to train data models to be able to anticipate how fraudsters are going to drive injection attacks, or they're going to use a particularly fraudulent document, right? You might find that a document from country A or country B is the most frauded document. Well, that's a key alert when somebody's onboarding. And the more information you can get to financial institutions, say, be on the lookout for this, because that's the number one frauded document. So using a biometric attribute gives you a much stronger sense of confidence in terms of the way that we onboard. By the same token, I think we're entering an arms race because the bad actors have access to those tools. They have access to those documents. They're getting ahead of the curve in many respects in trying to tap into where the weakness is in the financial system. And the more you have, banks are typically set up in a perimeter-based approach. You don't even have parts of the bank that speak to each other, let alone architecting a solution or your IT infrastructure that speaks as one. So that's inviting more risk and compromise to your financial ecosystem than you would like. So this is the balance we're seeing with AI, and part of the reason why I think banks are under pressure now to revisit their financial architecture to say, how do we look at this as more of a cohesive approach to solving our business problems, not only from a customer experience standpoint, but also fraud?
Have you seen, let's say, a particularly strong uptake in these types of attacks since ChatGPT launched, let's say, 2 years ago up until today, where, let's say, with agentic AI, you do see that there's certain elements of executions you can put fully on autopilot with a certain level of intelligence, and that happens at scale, meaning how do you fight that off 24/7 in the context of what Entrust is looking after, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, I think the annual cost of fraud to an organization is now around $13 million on average, right? And a deep fake gets created about every 5 minutes. Once a deep fake is embedded in your organization, it's almost impossible to find. It's almost like a sleeper cell. It is impossible to navigate, find, and root out from your organization. So the answer to the question is, in the last 3 or 4 years, we've seen an exponential increase in fraud attacks, and the cost that it has to industries, the cost to individual businesses, it's now a line item. It's now something that you plan for in your business model, whereas previously that would not have been the case. No different than you're planning your healthcare benefits and the cost of health. You're planning the fraud as part of doing business. A very different mindset than we had 5 years ago. It was always there, but never to the extent that we're dealing with today.
Yeah, right now it really is at that scale. So again, interesting insight that by now it's becoming a line item and you forecast on it almost. There's a benchmark.
It's not a question of when organizations will be impacted, right? It's just how much will it be impacted, right? And it's also not just in the context of fraud itself. It's also who do you invite as an actor inside of your organization, right? And you're seeing more of that from a money laundering perspective, right? Watch lists. Those are bigger concerns for organizations. Say, once you have deposits into your financial institution and you've let bad actors in, it's not just the fraud, it's the type of individual that you've also let into the organization that will put the financial institution under scrutiny as well.
Let's focus on the customers that you do want to have and retain. What is the shift that banks have to make to really satisfy their expectations? We talked now a little bit about the customer experience. We talked about, of course, there's fraudsters and there's a portion of population and AI fraudsters we do not want to have enter the financial institution. But for those that you do want to service, next to that great experience, what's the current expectation in the market? How do you succeed?
Certainly, when you're onboarding to a financial institution, you're attaching your direct deposit, you're starting to say, I want to do business with this organization, you really need to get the instant gratification of your push-to-wallet, your digital card going straight out to your payment vehicle of choice, call it your mobile device or future your wearable. So that's not going to be something that you're going to want to have to intentionally undertake yourself. That's something that the financial institution be pushing. So it's part of the, instantly, I've now got my card activated. I'm out and running. And what's really proven is that if a cardholder gets that activation, 95% of cardholders are off and running day one and they're spending. And that's obviously what you want as a financial institution. You go back to the traditional models, if the card wasn't activated inside the first 3 months, it's never going to be used. Ever. Just won't be used. Period. So a lot of cards that get issued and then just sit and they're in your desk. You never use them, right? Not in your wallet. So getting them in your wallet, also giving customers control over their spending, their ability to look at card controls, the ability to activate, deactivate. If you've got a fraud alert or if you've got something that you're concerned about, you can press pause. It's probably the best way to describe it, right? It's a bit like watching a movie. You get up and you want to conduct You go take a bathroom break, go make a cup of coffee, I'll come back and watch the movie again. Well, it's no different than in your payment cycle. You want to be in a position to be able to be in control of that. Things like pushing into the wallet, as you say, additional capabilities. And banks have to also be thinking about the fraud protection through tokenization and making sure that they're giving customers that trusted posture. You want to be in a position to know once it's inside my preferred payment vehicle that I'm not only in control of it, but I also feel that the device is trusted. I feel that I'm in a secure environment to go about my business. And these are top of mind things I think banks now are wrestling with. Some are doing it far better than others. And particularly the disruptors are challenging the established way of going about this.
Yeah, I would also add that the disruptors, let's take the classic example of Revolut, they're combining everything that you've just shared, which is making a traditional card usage modern and instantly available in whatever device you're utilizing. But on top of that, they're also allowing you to leverage the crypto exchanges. They allow you to hold Bitcoins. They allow you to even do FX type of activities across the world at a very low rate. So they combine all of these different more modern things with a brand of trust, where maybe my question to you would be, how do you see those combinations? Because to me, it seems like Entrust is very much then the classic side of banking. Or do you also, let's say, apply your scrutiny and your capability on the newer ways of payment that are currently coming to life?
Yeah, the simple answer is that we're involved in both. And what we're finding is much of this is highly complementary to things that we've already been involved in for several years. So go back 20 years, Entrust was involved in the instant gratification in the instant issuance of a financial card. You walk into a bank branch, you pick up a card that is integrated into the core and switch, and it's instantly activated. You walk across the street and you're paying. So we've been at the forefront of understanding what user experience really means, right the way fast forward to now the digital complement of saying, well, I may not want to go into the bank branch immediately, but I want to get activation of a digital asset. Very similar capabilities, very similar integrations are required in order for you to go about that, right? So we see it from both ends of the spectrum. What we're seeing also is the lift up from traditional financial institutions who are craving the opportunity to complement physical with digital and asking, how can we help? Particularly when you consider that we've been at the forefront of that digital disruption with the buy now, pay laters, right? Who are on a tear for net new consumers. So it's a lot of learning, a lot of experience comes from that side that you can take back in and help traditional financial institutions. So you can act as a trusted advisor. You can help banks understand what steps they need to take in order to get there. Who's on first? What things you need to think about in your account origination? How do you think about the experience and what do you need to do in order to capture the imagination of somebody who hasn't traditionally gone about this in a digital fashion? How do you derive that comfort? So that experience has really lent itself very well to helping disruptor banks, but vice versa, helping traditional banks do the same thing.
So clearly complementary. Gotcha. Now, we talked quite a bit about the why you would go for a payments modernization and why you would like to have the capabilities like Entrust brings them to the table. Can you tell me a little bit about the how, as in what needs to hold true to actually implement all of these types of capabilities in a, let's say, traditional incumbent institution that is looking to have these types of functionalities and these types of experiences for their end users?
So the things that you've really got to embed in your thinking is the role of biometrics in being able to think about your consumer. The days when you could rely on some of the traditional mediums of identifying a customer are coming under more and more scrutiny. It's easy to fraud documents, and we're seeing that more and more. It's much harder to fraudulently represent somebody. And biometrics is a critical component of the day one experience. And the guidance to financial institutions is the sooner you can incorporate that into your thinking, the better off you're going to be. Tokenization continues to keep credentials safe. That's really table stakes. But I would also say what we're investing in quite extensively is building stronger fraud engines. And those fraud engines are more and more robust when you can leverage some of the data associated with how financial organizations are being impacted by fraudsters. So the more information that can be shared in that area, the more support we can obtain to use that in training fraud engines and training models to get ahead of the curve, certainly will help financial institutions have more predictability in their business model. And that becomes so much more important as they consider their growth strategy. And how do I leverage that, what I know, in an area I feel safe before I make a decision to navigate a new geography or navigate a new vertical? Banks by design are risk averse, right? We all understand that, right? We're dealing with people's financial assets, and we're pleased in many respects that they are. But at the same time, as fraud and AI and big data is getting on the agenda, the importance of actually moving from that very perimeter-based risk posture to thinking about how do you use best of breed technology and analytics and fraud capability into getting ahead of the fraud curve means that you've got to think about your risk posture. You can't be as static as you used to be. You have to be more dynamic in the way you think about it. And whether we like it or not, more fraud is being invited into the ecosystem.
100%. Now, let's assume I want to implement this. Let's talk a little bit more about the practicalities. What's the typical timeline to implement Entrust and to really bring it to life and get the value out of it and be ahead of fraud? What can you tell us that gives us a bit more view on what that looks like?
Yeah, if you want to go for a front-facing digital card capability, push that into a wallet, get it out to your financial, get it out to consumers sooner rather than later. One of the things Entrust has done is invested very intentionally with key partners. Backbase, obviously, is one of those partners, but there are several others that, with intentionality, we've built strong integrations with core and switch providers, to mobile app providers, and also some of the third-party credit score and background check watchlist type providers as well, which means that we can get from now to an implementation in a 3-month time horizon. So you're not looking at years of work to get some of these things out. It's in the 3-month category that you can get some of that. Now, obviously, each financial institution has its own complexities. And if you're dealing with something that is net new, it can obviously cause some pain for both, but that's a typical time horizon. You could push something like that out. Where it gets a bit more complex, particularly as you think about the biometric and you think about the onboarding experience that goes with that, one of the things you have to be really careful with, and this comes from a lot of experience, is your regulatory policy and privacy concerns from a compliance standpoint. Maintaining compliance, particularly as we're seeing some of the emergence of this onboarding, getting stronger regulatory oversight, rightfully so, as you think about AML and some of the new currencies that are on the agenda, the cryptocurrencies, it's requiring more scrutiny associated with how do we get consumers and how do we get organizations comfortable with that. You need to make sure you've done your homework in that regard. And that's an area we put an awful lot of emphasis on to try to make sure that compliance is for growth, not to actually present barriers to being able to go about your business.
It sounds a bit like a dream almost, that compliance is helping you grow. Have you seen it in real life that they are at the table with that growth mindset or basically supporting the growth agenda as much?
It's becoming more and more relevant in conversations and prevalent in deployment methods, because as you think about the movement of EID, particularly EIDAS, you look at mobile driver's license. There's 27 member states that are going to go for an EIDAS implementation. You've got mobile driver's license being on the agenda for certainly the US and the UK. And then you've got the government source of truth as well. The need to onboard using some type of digital attribute, right, that may have been formed outside of the initial onboarding for consumer finance application, using that or reusing that is of critical importance. Well, how that identity is ultimately able to be utilized in a particular geo will be different from geo to geo. It won't invite cross-border transactions if you don't broker the communication between geo one and geo two, and it's not being used in the right way. Also, making sure that how it's set up from being able to onboard a customer and what data you can use, what data you can't use. Very important that you're working with the regulator. You're working very closely to make sure that you're enabling that sooner rather than later. Because the challenge is if you don't do this, you put consumers at a point where you get one chance to make a good first impression. If you don't do that up front, then you lose that consumer. The willingness to pay dissipates very, very fast. So incorporating those things into your business model and your thinking is critical if you're going to leverage some of these new digital assets that are available. Otherwise, you get very much stuck in individual transaction environments.
Now, coming back to the fact that you have spent already 17 years in Entrust, makes you directly a veteran in the domain, I would say.
Not me, 17. My boss, Todd Wilkinson, has been the CEO for 17. He's actually been with Entrust 20. I'm a mere baby. I've only been with Entrust just over 9 years. So,
well, I would say that's sufficient to ask the question still, luckily. Thanks for the correction, though. Nevertheless, the question I wanted to ask is, if you've been around in this space for so long, you probably have a few key learnings that you would share with any typical executive that is looking into this domain, that has a certain challenge or maybe has a certain ambition to completely modernize their payments infrastructure or to at least address a certain set of issues that you can solve for. What's like the common denominator that's valuable to them when it comes to, hey, really look at ABC. These three things are really important to you when you're looking into solving these issues. Like, what are the key learnings that you can share that, you know, they can practically apply, you know, starting today?
So, and it's probably fair to say I've been in the payment identity industry for about 35 years. So beyond the Entrust environment, I've grown up in this. A lot of what I think is overlooked by executives going down this path is not really thinking through who you invite at the table and what references you look to leverage of people who've been able to do this successfully. So thinking through how do you talk through your network and begin to understand who's gone through similar experiences like this and what were some of the immediate pain points that they had to overcome before you embark on that particular project that you've identified that is important to your bank, whether that's trying to get an onboarding experience, whether it's a push to XPay or push to wallet experience, is typically going to find that there are strong references out there, and talk to the executives that have gone through that. The second is really make sure that you understand where your organization is currently equipped, both in terms of skill set and in terms of infrastructure to be able to take on the challenge. Not all organizations have the right mindset associated with what you're going to deal with, nor are they equipped through their current infrastructure to be able to deliver on that. So you could find yourself going down a particular path of implementing it only to be entirely disappointed by both the cost and the outcome, because the constraints continue to narrow as you find that you're getting closer to delivering on what you thought you promised. And by the time you get there, you've compromised so much that the outcome doesn't hit the customer experience. Okay. The other thing I would say we found invaluable is invite the consumer into your discussion, invite those that are at the tip of the spear and are working with your products, user groups, customers that you've profiled very early on that you want to excite. Change is not easy for consumers to navigate. It's the most difficult thing to do is to change human behavior. And you have to invite conversations with your target audience early on as to what they value in their interactions with the financial institution. Why did they choose you in the first place? And what is it that you hope to accomplish by providing the next generation of solution to your target audience? And it's very easy to miss a trick if you haven't spent the time to really understand what your customer base is looking for. Why did they choose you in the first place, and why will they stay with you? Because if that experience is a poor one, you can pretty much guarantee that somebody is ultimately then looking at saying, let's find an alternative. That's the place you want to be.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. I'm assuming that the third one you shared is likely where you would preferably start. Like, get the customer in the room, understand what is really going well, what they're lacking, or why they're frustrated with the experience or the service that you're delivering, which will then inform, hopefully, you need something different here to really make progress, which then probably means, okay, where are you? What's your infrastructure? Do you have the right people? Do you have the right culture, the right mindset? I guess for a large portion, that's probably not holding true. So they have another issue to tackle first.
Precisely. I thought I'd save the best till last. It's your consumer that's the most important. You lose sight of that and your business is in big trouble.
What I typically try to do, Tony, is to wrap up the episode in a few key takeaways. So when you saw me writing, that's what I'm doing. I'm not making a drawing here in the meantime. And interestingly enough, you gave me three pointers of three. The first set of three pointers were more about the what, as in what needs to hold true to be successful in the payments modernization domain, and what's the, let's say, three elements you really need to bring to the table. You shared number one, biometrics are critical. They have to be in the mix. If they're not in the mix, then you're basically open for fraudsters and AI-driven fraudsters, and you're basically ending up in serious, let's say, problems down the line. The second one you shared is tokenization is not an option anymore. It's table stakes. A tokenization basically makes sure that the cards that you have and that you leverage are truly secure, right? Very, very important. And then third, you talked a little bit about the fraud engines and making sure that these fraud engines consistently get trained on the latest and greatest so that they can recognize and basically throw the right flags for those behaviors or those fraudulent documents or fraudulent procedures that you should just pick up on and close the door for. So biometrics, tokenization, and fraud engines. That's basically the three ingredients or parameters that you shared. You need to have those at the table. If you don't have those or you miss one of them, you might want to look elsewhere. And then lastly, we just wrapped up with three key learnings from the past 9 years, although you've been in the space for 35, a lot of numbers today. And in essence, you start with what's really up with the customer, basically understanding what's their experience, what they're looking for, and how you can give them that solid experience while being super safe and super compliant. Then secondly, try to understand where you are, the infrastructure, the technology, the people you have around you, and the talent that they have to basically drive progress, the skills. You didn't really talk about culture, but to me, that's almost implicit. Do you have the right mindset to make the shift and really drive progress? And then lastly, very interesting point, who do you talk with to find out if the party you're going to work with and collaborate with to fix this particular domain is credible? Referenceability, who can you talk with, other executives that also made the switch, either to a party or to, another option to make progress? Who do you talk with? Who are the practitioners who've done it before? Very nice ingredient, I would say, to really benchmark your own thoughts against what you're hearing from the technology partner or anyone else you're collaborating with. So very nice insights. Thanks for sharing, Tony. Is there anything that I'm lacking or any one of those where you would say double click on that one, if anything?
Not really, Tim. I would just say if only people inside my organization listened and summarized as intently as you did, I'm really impressed. No, I'm just kidding. Well, I have a fabulous team, and they do listen to me from time to time. But I spend more time listening to them because I learn a ton from them, which I'm inspired by. So, no, I think your articulation was spot on. The only abiding comment I would leave is this is an incredibly exciting time to be in the financial space, serving consumers, understanding the pain points that they are living with every day, the feeling of being vulnerable and wanting to make sure that consumers can go about their business confidently. You have the confidence to transact. You don't feel vulnerable. You feel safe in the way you go about it. And as an identity company, giving human beings the opportunity to go out and conduct their business with a safe posture, with a confident posture, and to put a smile on their face is why I love what I do. And I love working in this space and enjoy it every single day.
There you go. Thanks for sharing. One final thing before we wrap up for today. You're the incoming CEO. April, the journey is going to start all the way. What's the thing that you're most excited about or looking forward to in the upcoming position?
Growing the company. Entrust is an incredible organization. We have an incredibly strong ownership model, a great team of people, a board that is incredibly supportive of the path we're on. Leverage the foundation that was provided and afforded me through Todd's tenure, but look to take this to new heights of growth over the coming years. And I'm truly excited by the consumer journey and indeed the parallel citizen journey and some of the things that are taking place in the identity space that I think will transform the way we think, work, and act over the next decade. So it's the growth mindset I'm most attracted to.
Awesome. Well, wishing you a lot of success going into April next year. I hope you still have time for me next year, because it would be nice after 6 or 9 months to check in and compare notes on the industry and how you're doing. But I'll reach out when the time comes.
Tim, I'll always have time for you, as I will the Backbase team, and very much enjoy the environment that we work in. So appreciate the opportunity to spend time with you today, Tim.
Likewise. Thanks for the partnership. Thanks for being on the show today, Tony. For the listeners, you can find Tony on LinkedIn. Search for Tony Ball, and you can basically follow him on his journey and also see everything that Entrust is working on in the space. Once again, thanks for joining, Tony. See you all next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.